Hello, everyone. I am Jessica Saxton, the Environmental Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Mulala, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer, and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. Hello, everyone. I have Steve Denny with Umpqua Oaks Partnership joining us today to talk about oaks and oak restoration. Thank you for joining us today. Could you provide a little bit of information about yourself and what you do?
Well, I'm the coordinator for the Umpqua Oaks Partnership. I have a long history in Douglas County, worked 37 years for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then 7 years for the Nature Conservancy before starting with the Umpqua Oaks Partnership. So had a lot of experience in the Umpqua and know quite a few people, and that's what I've been doing.
Wonderful. Definitely like a rich history of employment and different jobs. So can you provide some information about the Umpqua Oaks Partnership and kind of what the organization does?
Yeah, about 3 years ago, I was asked to coordinate and develop an oak conservation group in the Umpqua Basin. There were four other groups already started in Oregon, one up in the Columbia River near Hood River in the Dalles, one in the Portland area, the Willamette Valley, and then a fourth one down in the Klamath Rogue area. And there wasn't one in the Umpqua, and I was asked to kind of start it. So I got people together that I knew had an interest in oaks, got some landowners to participate, and it's just kind of built from there. We've been doing a number of things over the past 3+ years, I guess it is now, but a lot of interest in oaks and that type of habitat, a realization that first, Douglas County has a lot of oaks, which is nice. We kind of operate from an area of strength versus places like the Portland area or the Willamette, where they're down to saving individual oaks. So we have a lot of oaks still in the Umpqua, but they are under some stress and disappearing a little bit. So, but like I say, it's been gratifying to see the interest in oaks and people wanting to do the right thing with conservation and restoration.
Thank you. That sounds like a lot of great work you guys have been doing. And it's great that we have Oak Conservation Group in the Umpqua Basin now. That's amazing.
Yeah, the Umpqua Oaks Partnership is kind of a combination of landowners, non-governmental agencies, and governmental, both all federal, state, and local governments, as well as just people that are interested in oaks for a variety of reasons, participating. We meet once monthly. They're like every organization, we have a core group that kind of does all the stuff, but they kind of help me lay out activities that we want to get into, such as workshops, tours, those sorts of things over time. And it's just grown almost exponentially in the last couple of years.
That's awesome. So can you explain why oaks are so important?
Well, they're known as a keystone species. A keystone species is one that a lot of other species kind of depend on. And if you don't have that species around, the whole life web kind of starts to fall apart. And oaks are really valuable in that there are some species that are wholly dependent on oak, like acorn woodpeckers and Lewis's woodpeckers and some of those species, as well as a number of insects that are dependent on oak. And so So, like I say, trying to make sure what we're trying to do is educate people on the importance of oaks, let them make their decisions on, what they want to do as far as restoration or conservation. Oaks are long lived. They can live to be 300 to 400 years old, and some even longer. So, they've got that history there as well. They produce acorns, of course, which a lot of species feed on, a lot of habitat for, like I say, a ton of insects depend on them. So things like bats and birds and things that eat insects are wholly dependent on. Plus, there's a whole life web underneath the ground. When oaks lose their leaves, there's a big duff layer. Their root system supports a lot of nematodes and invertebrates that are dependent on it. And so it's really quite amazing the number of species that use oaks, not only here in Douglas County, but all over the United States and even in Europe. And so, like I say, it's when you get to reading about it and working with it, it's really amazing how important they are. So.
Yeah, they are definitely really important. You mentioned the underground workings. I learned recently that different mycorrhizal fungi attach to different trees, and oaks specifically are different than other tree varieties, which was interesting.
And we have five species of oak in Douglas County. The two that we're kind of focusing on are California black oak and more importantly Oregon white oak. We also have tan oak, Canyon live oak, and what I call Saddler's oak. Those are down in the south west part of the county in more of the serpentine soils, a little bit harsher climates. But like I say, the ones that we're focused on really are white oaks and black oaks. So,
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of those in this area. Yeah.
and they range all the way from almost sea level up to we've got some oaks up on the Forest Service area, up like Big Oak Flats and Illihee that are up, 3,000 feet. They're really specialized in certain habitats and soil types, so we do have them up that high. But most of the oaks are found in the foothills of the Umpqua, below 2,000 feet. Almost all the oaks are on private land. There are oaks on public land, but the vast majority of them are on private, and that's why we spend so much time, working with landowners.
Can I ask why there's not as many oaks on public lands? Do you know?
I think just as you get up in elevation, you start to get into more of the conifer, type habitats and deeper soils. Like I say, as you get up to Oak Flats, it's just a relatively small area of shallow soils that will support oaks and the right aspect, south facing aspect, and that sort of thing. So I just think the foothills of the Umpqua are just ideal oak habitat. And as you get higher in elevation, you start to get into the firs and the incense cedar and a bunch of other things that kind of grow in those types of habitats.
That makes sense. Yeah. Thank you. So I'm assuming the transition to urbanization, agricultural fields, and more wildfires that we've been having has had an impact on oak health and growth. Could you provide some information as to how they're impacted?
Well, certainly, when the area was settled back in the 1800s, and even to today, people, considered oaks kind of a—I wouldn't call them a trash tree, but a tree to be gotten rid of. It's been cut down for firewood, slashed and burned, creating a livestock pasture. If you go up the North Umpqua River between here and Glide, you can see areas, and they're cleared. You can see the cleared fence lines and that sort of thing. So yeah, that has happened. And of course, our cities have grown in size. And when they subdivide an area, they usually take out most of the oaks to create places for houses. The interstate, creates. They have to clear that type of land. So yeah, oaks have been under under pressure through time, all over Oregon, and especially along the I-5 corridor. So yeah, I guess it's urbanization, but people impact them. And then, like I say, when an oak gets cut down, it might be a 400-year-old oak, and it takes a while for that to come back. So, but like I say, the thing we're trying to do is educate the landowners on how important oaks are to the ecosystem and to wildlife and to the watershed itself, as far as slowing down water and that sort of thing, and then let them make their own decisions. What we would hope is, when they want to cut down a tree, they'll maybe take out a Madrone or a Doug, and more importantly, a Douglas fir that's competing with them. But that's, of course, their choice. And so we're just providing a lot of information to them on things. And really, like I said, I've gotten a really good reception. People like oak trees, and there's a ton of bird life that's in and around them, and wildlife that use them. So it has not been a hard sell, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I know I definitely like oaks, and I also like madrones, so that's tough. But if I had to choose, I would definitely get rid of the madrone, just because I feel like there's less species that would use the madrone. Yeah.
Madrone's important. They have a berry that what last year I think it was, we had a tremendous Madrone berry crop, and at least on my place here, there were so many robins and cedar waxwings using those at times you couldn't even hear yourself think because of all the bird noise that was going on out there. So yeah, Madrones are nice, and they don't compete as much with oaks as the Douglas fir do. The Doug fir, when it grows up through the, is probably one of the number one threats, and there's a reason this is happening. But they grow and they shade out the oaks, and the oaks need full sun. If they get shaded out, the roots tend to start to die away, and that's when you get those big oaks that fall over. So, taking out the oak trees definitely, if you've got oaks around them, definitely helps the oak.
That makes sense. And oaks are really good at sustaining water, correct?
Yes, yeah, because their root system is so vast. I mean, some of the oak trees, their crowns are, 60, 70, 100 feet wide, and the root system, at least they're finding now, that root system goes out well beyond. Used to be considered they go out to the drip line was kind of the limit, but now they've actually, people have dug out the root systems, and they go well beyond the drip line. So they do hold a lot of soil out quite a ways from the oak tree.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. So we talked a little bit about kind of urbanization and having to cut trees. Is there a visible difference in the oak habitat from now compared to decades previous?
Oh yeah, when the pioneers first arrived here, the Native Americans actually managed oak pretty intensively with controlled fire, and they lit a lot of fires in the fall. There was no underbrush, it's mainly grass, and it burned real slow and kind of creeped along. Oaks are very fire resistant to that type of fire. But the Native Americans managed those oak trees to one, number one, they had very large, wide-spaced, large trees out there, what some people call legacy trees, but those with the huge, big, wide canopies produce a lot more acorns, which the Native Americans used for food. They'd create flour for bread and that sort of thing. And then the fire also would burn away the understory. And when it greened up and the grasses came in, then the bears and elk and deer would be attracted to that area for hunting. So there's some pretty good, not pictures that back that far in the early 1800s, but certainly drawings of in the Umpqua of explorers that found, Native Americans burning. They had oak orchards out there that they actually managed them. And then through time, as we've done away with fire, it's slowly being encroached upon by the understory and invasive species such as Scotch broom and knapweed and blackberry and English hawthorn and those sorts of things. that are kind of taken over. So yes, this used to be a lot of fir on the north slopes, oak on the south slopes, and mainly grass, what they call an oak savanna grassland. And it's just slowly been kind of disappearing, grown in. It does that slowly over time. You don't really recognize it from year to year, but if you were gone for 20, 30 years and then came back to the country, you go, wow, where'd all the brush came from? So yeah, it was actively managed, and we would eventually like to get back to that controlled burning and reduce the fuel loads for a couple of one. It reduces the fear of a catastrophic fire, because if you don't have those ladder fuels in the understory, then the fires kind of creep along. They don't really do a lot of damage. They don't get into the crowns, and it's a lot better for the habitat. So we'd like to reintroduce that fire because it has a lot of great benefits for oaks as well as other things, and helps control some of the invasive species.
That's so true. Those ladders that are created from fires can be very dangerous. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Once
Yeah.
that, if you get a little wind and it gets in those ladder fuels and gets up in the crown, then that just kind of sweeps through large areas and very quickly, where a small grass fire underneath an oak just kind of creeps along, and doesn't the flame length doesn't get very long, and certainly doesn't affect oaks and pines and that sort of thing. So,
I have worked with Ken Carlone
yes.
at the Ewe Creek doing some oak restoration there, and it is the difference is crazy. The restored oak savanna is completely different than the area that is overrun with blackberries and invasive species. It's completely
Yeah.
different.
Yep. Ken's a member of the UOP and has been since its conception. But yeah, when you burn an understory and stuff and get rid of all that understory vegetation, you get a lot of annual wildflowers come back in, a lot of native grasses come back in under that, and that's what oak evolved with, or evolved with oak. And like I say, if we can restore that type of habitat, that would be great. And it doesn't have to be everywhere, but certainly the bigger patches that we can manage, that would be a step in the right direction. So to that end, we've been spending a lot of time trying to educate people on tours and workshops, and we've got some literature that we hand out to landowners, and letting them know what they can do, where they can go for help, that sort of thing. So.
Awesome. That sounds like some really great work you guys have been doing. So, you mentioned that you work mostly with local residents and landowners, to educate them. So, could you provide any information on like current projects you're working on or how you work with landowners?
Well, one of the first thing that we did as a Umpqua Oaks partnership was identify the threats to oak habitats. And basically we identify, I don't know, probably 15 different threats, but five of those we consider kind of high value threats. And a couple of them we've already talked about, lack of fire, invasive species, reintroducing fire to the system, conversion to intensive agriculture. And nowadays that's primarily vineyards. All the vineyards that are going in on the hillsides and stuff are clearing a lot of oak. And then conversion to commercial timber, although that's not as much of a threat as it was probably 20 years ago. People are recognizing that, planting Douglas fir on a south slope doesn't, that's probably not, they might survive 20 years or so, but if it's like my farm out here in Looking Glass, probably 60 or 70% of the firs have died in the last 5 or 10 years because of the drought. And so, like I say, and it, so that planting firs in the right place is a good thing, but trying to force them into, a dry site is not. So we identified the threats, so we kind of knew where to target our things. We then sent out a questionnaire to over 1,000 landowners, in four priority areas that we had identified. And the information we got back was, first off, was somewhat surprising to us. And we sent out questionnaires to landowners that had as little as 5 acres up to 3 or 4,000 acres. And so we got a real varied response, but people were interested in reintroducing fire back onto their property. Of course, they're concerned about liability issues, lack of funding, you know, lack of equipment, you know, to do it right, that sort of thing. But the three things that they really focused on was they wanted more information on oaks and how to manage them. And we got about 1,200 different pamphlets of different education material that we could hand out. They wanted tours where they could go out and look at restoration projects on the ground. And we've had two tours. I think about 120 people have participated, landowners have participated on those. We have another one we're trying to schedule for July that has to do with a controlled burn, so people can learn about that. They also wanted workshops where they could we could meet and bring in the experts. We had our first one last summer, was attended by 60 people. We're hoping to do another workshop tied in with this controlled burn that we're trying to do. So we'd have people talking about the process and what you need to do and the prep work and all of that, and then go out and see a controlled burn. And we're hoping that will occur in July. The workshop I'm not too concerned about, but of course, burning depends on the weather conditions and that sort of thing. So picking a date a month in advance and saying we're going to burn on that day, we might do it, we might not. So it depends on what the burn conditions are. But so that's what we've been trying to do with the public. Also, I've been going around. I got a grant from OWEB on stakeholder engagement, and I spent the last year going around to many groups, probably 15 different groups in Douglas County of landowners, to talk to them about oaks, the importance of oaks, you know, what you can do to help conserve and restore. Groups like the Farm Bureau, the Douglas County Livestock Association, the Small Woodlands Association, probably one of the better ones I did was the Master Gardeners, believe it or not. And they were really interested in helping us grow oaks from acorns, either for sale or giveaway. And we're going to work with them the next time we have a good acorn crop and see if we can't do it, because there's no locally sourced oak trees that you can buy or get a hold of right now, other than grow your own. And so, like I say, just it's been really encouraging, the involvement and the interest in it. So I'm hoping to continue doing that. There's some other groups we haven't hit. I think there's a lot of, you know, like Rotaries and Kiwanis Clubs and, you know, some of these small independent road districts that, you know, are out away from town in the rural areas that have a small group of landowners. And that would be someplace we could go meet. So that is time consuming, but like I say, it starts to get the word out on things that we can do and places we can go take a look at restoration efforts.
That's really cool. I'm glad so many people in the community are connecting with you and showing engagement. That's amazing.
Yeah, I wasn't, to be honest with you, real sure when I first started this. I knew some people had an interest in oaks, but it's been pretty overwhelming. I haven't heard a lot of negativity at all. Even from some of the major commercial type landowners, they're interested in doing what they can and, you know, where they can. You know, oaks aren't going to, like a vineyard, they're not going to have oaks out in the middle of their grapes by and large, but most of those vineyards have land outside of, you know, their fence where they've got the grapes. And if we could do something outside to conserve the oaks out there, you know, I think that might be a great marketing tool for them. They usually want to do the right thing. And we're going to be reaching out to them this summer, starting to work with some of the individual and getting that education out there and the importance and what are the opportunities to work together on some of this. So that's what I've been doing with the landowners. Because like I say, if I had to reach out in the air and grab a number, it'd probably be 80% of the oaks are found on private land. Plus, you got a lot of individual oaks on, you know, in house lots in town and, you know, that sort of thing. In subdivisions, they have left some oaks out there. So being able to manage those, not overwater them, because oaks don't like a lot of water, but there are a lot of oaks in town and on the edge of towns.
So for someone who has a smaller yard, would an oak be suitable for like a quarter of an acre?
And to be honest with you, what some of the studies have found is that an individual oak in the back of a house lot, not surrounded by other oaks, has the same, almost the same wildlife component as an oak found in a vast oak woodland. So, you know, just having that one oak out there, you can hold a component of birds and, you know, certainly squirrels that come and get the nuts and, you know, you've got your root system and that sort of thing. So it can still be supportive. So yes, an individual oak is still important. Like I say, up in the Portland area, you know, they do save and work to save individual oaks because, you know, their oak system is disappearing over time.
That's so sad. So you mentioned working with a wide range of landowners. And you also said there's no native nurseries that grow oaks. If a nursery was to grow oaks, would there be a sustainable market for it?
That's kind of the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think we want to test that and find out. It's one of those, there is a demand for it. Whether there's a demand to sustain a business that does only oaks, what I would think is you'd want to have a native plant nursery that not just focuses on oaks, but all the native understory plants. And we do have a group now that called the understory, trying to think of the actual name on the understory group, I think it is, but they're looking at, you know, getting seed sources for some of the native shrubs that are associated with oak and some of the understory grasses, you know, like California oak grass and Romer's fescue, I think it is, some of those types of things. And so I think oaks, I doubt if there would be enough for a business, but maybe a native plant business would certainly, people are looking for that sort of thing. There seems to be a more of a trend toward native type stuff. And certainly that would be better. An awful lot of our invasive species started out as ornamentals and, you know, through the nursery business. And so if we could get a movement or a business focused on native plants, that would be great. So
Phoenix School, they do native plants. And yes, I just recently got native wildflower seeds from them.
Yep.
And then the other person I was thinking of was the Umpqua Plant Partnership.
Yes, the understory.
Is that what that,
understory folks, yeah.
So, and Morgan there has been phenomenal at working together with Umpqua Watersheds to find seeds and work together to, you know, collect them from out in the wild. So if they had oak seeds, I would be more than happy to buy some starts from them. Yeah,
Morgan's actually coming out to my place here in Looking Glass tomorrow. We're going to go look at some of the native plants for collecting seed, both down in my wetland and then up on the upland in the oak forest stuff. So yeah, she does a great job. And like I say, where it's kind of in its infancy, but we're starting to get people that can collect seed, you know, and have that seed source out there. It's pretty expensive seed to collect and to clean and to maintain and that sort of thing. But and then oaks, you know, don't have reliable acorn crops. Seems like about every 2 or 3 years out of 5, we get a good acorn crop. But when we have a good acorn crop, it's really phenomenal. I think two and a half years ago, we had one that's just unbelievable. And I made the mistake of offering my grandkids $10 for a 5 gallon bucket of acorns. And I left for the weekend. When I came back, there was 11 buckets full of acorns on the front porch, and they were waiting for their money. But, Yeah, on a good acorn, you know, but last year we didn't have any white acorns or very few. Had some black oak acorns, but like I say, so you got to kind of pick your years. But you know, if you have a good acorn crop, you can grow them and plant them as yearlings and as 2-year-olds. I've never tried planting a 3-year-old oak. I'm sure you could do it, but like I say, we just need to get that expertise out there. But growing acorn or growing oak trees from acorns is not extremely difficult if you do it right. And one of the handouts we've got is growing oaks from acorns, and it's put out by the Forest Service, and it's a pretty good handout of how to float the acorns so you can tell the good ones from the bad ones. You put them in a bucket of water, and the bad acorns float to the top because it's all air inside. The ones with a good viable nut sink to the bottom, so you can kind of weed through the bad ones and focus in on the good ones. And like I say, you can either broadcast them, you can kind of bury them in a shallow little shallow hole and cover them up, or you can actually grow the tree for a yearling or a 2-year-old to plant later on. So and the only trick to it is oaks grow a really long taproot their first 2 years of life. You might only have 2 or 3 inches of green leaves above the ground, but an 18-inch taproot, you know, because that's what they got to do to get down to where they get enough water to survive. And so the mistake most people make is they put them in a 6 or 8-inch pot. Well, that taproot just goes down and starts to curl on itself. So you need about an 18-inch long, narrow 18 or 20-inch pot to hold them. And that way you get a nice long straight taproot. And then when you plant them, you got to make sure that taproot stays straight. And so, like I
What
said, there's some little tricks.
happens if the taproot doesn't stay straight?
Well, it just starts to curl. And it just like planting the Doug fir, you know, they call it J rooting when people don't get the thing in there straight and everything. And they kind of force it down, it curls up. The survival's not great on them.
Okay. On a side note, I've been trying to figure out a tree to plant in my backyard for shade. I'm going to remove a hybrid plum cherry tree. Super obnoxious. And I need something for shade that grows quick, that doesn't leave a whole bunch of stuff on the ground other than leaves. And my initial thought was oak. I was just concerned it might be a little too small of an area once its roots spread out.
Oaks do spread out. There's no doubt about it. I have not heard much. And I'm sure if we broadcast this, we'll hear back. But I've not heard people have had foundations ruined or sidewalks ruined because of oak. I'm sure that must happen at times. But probably the most negative thing about what you're describing is oaks grow very slowly, and so it would be a while before you would have shade, you know, on that tree. You're probably looking at 30, 40, 50, 60 years to get out there. Now, there's some things you can probably do to speed that up. There are some species of oaks, they're not natives, that grow pretty fast back from the East Coast, but those aren't native to the West Coast. But that's probably the biggest thing, is they just do not grow very fast.
Yeah.
So the
So
people that move there after you would probably be happy about it,
I
but
know.
you probably
Yes.
may not see the efforts. But there is a fellow that is probably one of the world's oak experts, but he did a planted a tree in his property, and his latest book kind of chronicles that through the years. He had a little neighbor girl that helped him plant the tree, and every 2 or 3 years they'd take a picture of her beside the tree, and it shows them kind of growing up together. It's kind of interesting. But
That is cool.
it was a red oak, if I'm not mistaken, but it grew very fast compared to our white oak tree. So
Yeah. So our oaks are pretty resilient to wildfires.
and very resilient to drought.
Yep.
They like drier over wetter, to be honest with you. So they're both drought resistant and fire resistant, which in this time of climate that we're in is pretty valuable. They're going to outlast a lot of things. So,
yeah. So during our typical wildfires, not these intense wildfires that we've been having, but in theory, an oak would outsurvive a Douglas fir, right?
Oh, absolutely. Firs are really susceptible to fire. They have a very thin bark, and you know, they have a lot of low-growing branches that can catch fire, where oaks, you know, so kind of self-prune up to a fairly high level. Although, you know, if you've got lower branches, you can prune them as well. Oaks are just, and they've got a very, oaks have got a very thick bark that, you know, can withstand. I've got I do a slide presentation to all these groups, and I've got a picture of a, what do we call a cookie, a round that's been cut off the end of a very large oak. And in fact, Ken Carlone actually gave it to me, the slide, but it shows all the burn scars on that from the time it was a very tiny seedling until it got up. And with the native fires, there was fire scars every 2 to 4 years up until about the, if I remember right, it was about the 1620s or the 1640s when pioneers first came into this and started fighting all the fires and putting them out and stuff. But it just showed how many burn scars, and that oak seedling survived all those and ended up being, I think they count as like 200 or 300 years old when it blew down and they cut the cookie out of it. So we had very frequent fires back then, but I'm sure they were those low creeping ground fires is what I called them. The oaks are able to survive them just fine. And if you go out to in the North Umpqua in the fall when all the ranchers are burning their pastures, you know, those oaks have withstood fires, you know, every 2 or 3 years for forever, it seems like, because those ranchers continue to burn for pasture development, which is really the same thing that the Native Americans did.
And I'm assuming having more low intensity fires helps to improve their fire resistance.
Yeah, that thick bark, it gets thicker. Mm-hmm. And what that does is, you know, those are very wide spaced. This is that oak savanna. They might be, I don't know, 150, 200 feet, maybe even 300 feet separating, but they get these very large canopies on them. And those are the acorn producers. If they're too close together, you get these very straight, narrow canopies, and they don't produce nearly as many acorns. And so you have the oak savanna grassland, then you have the oak woodland, which is a higher density of oaks. And then you have oak mixed conifer, where you have conifers mixed in with the oaks, and that could be Doug fir, incense cedar, ponderosa pine. But ponderosa pine and oaks don't compete with each other because they're both pretty open trees, allow a lot of sunlight in. And the pines have thick bark as well, and they're adapted to fire. So they survive low intensity fires just fine. So
that's good. So what are the benefits for the entire ecosystem by incorporating more oaks onto our lands?
Well, that would take a while to do. But like I say, there are species, primarily birds, that are dependent on oaks. So, you know, those benefit from oak management. A number of birds and mammals are not dependent on oaks, but utilize oaks for a large segment of their life history. Probably the biggest thing is the insects, the caterpillars, the four moths. I think I can't remember the number of species of caterpillars, different caterpillars that they find, but those are just essential to the bird life and that sort of thing. And then of course, once they develop into moths or butterflies or whatever they end up doing, of course, the bats and the other insectivorous animals eat those. Another interesting thing about oaks is you see oak mistletoe and all these. A lot of people say that oak mistletoe will kill the oak trees. One of the tours that we did for private landowners was we had one of the, believe it or not, there's an oak mistletoe expert that spent his whole career studying oak mistletoe, but he came to Douglas County and took us on a tour. But the oak mistletoe uses oaks as hosts, but they don't kill the plant. They don't kill the oak because the parasite doesn't want to kill its host. That's not a good life history to have when you kill the thing you're dependent on. But they do form a weak spot on the tree, but the oak mistletoe berries, a lot of birds depend on those in the wintertime for the oak mistletoe berries, which start to form, I believe, in February and March. And like bluebirds, nuthatches, some of those really go after those. And of course, and robins. And when they feed on those berries and they squish them, that seed will shoot out and it's got a little adhesive to it. If it adheres to the right oak limb with the right thickness, then you'll get an oak mistletoe. But the only negative thing it does is it can lessen the strength of the oak, I guess. I'm trying to think of the right term right now, but it does create a weak spot that can break during a windstorm or snowstorm like Snowmageddon. So if you got oak mistletoe over your house, I'd probably take care of it. But by and large, oaks, the mistletoe seems to get along with oaks pretty well. So it's those types of things that get there. And then, like I told you, I couldn't even begin to talk about all the stuff that is found in the leaf litter and then in the soil and then around the root system. There's just thousands of different species that they've found.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming stuff like mushrooms mm-hmm. really enjoy oaks.
Yeah, not just mushrooms, but all the fungi, you know, mm-hmm. There's some that are, I'm sure, are dependent on oak. I'm not a fungi person. And so, or even an invertebrate person. So I'm mainly a wildlife biologist. So I do all the stuff above ground. So, but yeah, they're a fascinating tree when you get to reading all the things that they produce for life. So.
So can I ask you what drove you to focus on oaks if you're more of a wildlife biologist?
Well, I was raised in Eastern Oregon, in a small town in Eastern Oregon. We didn't have oaks there. And so when I moved to Roseburg in 1984 as a wildlife biologist for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, of course, I was interested in the wildlife, but that wildlife was all a lot really centered in the oaks. And I was just fascinated by the amount of bird life and animal life that I saw in oaks. And in 1994, we bought a 100-acre farm out here in Looking Glass. And so I had to start managing my property and just got into oaks because I had oaks and fir and pine and all of that. And so I've spent the last almost 30 years now, you know, controlling invasive species. I've introduced fire into the wetland. I'm hoping to do it up in the oak woodlands here at some point. So I've just grown to appreciate oaks. And when I was asked to, if I was interested in forming an oak partnership or an oak conservation group, I kind of jumped at it because I could see the benefits of educating the public on it, that if they had all the information, they would do the right thing. And I don't think you get very far by regulating or forcing people to do stuff. You just provide them the information. They all want to do the right thing. They all want to manage their property in the right way. And I say, I get calls, probably two or three calls a week on what can I do for oaks on my property. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the demand comes and you build the capacity and then the demand increases. So we're in that building stage right now of trying to get enough capacity to be able to do the things the landowners want to do. So
that's awesome. Yeah. It sounds like you definitely found your niche.
Well, I'm getting older. I don't, we'll see how long I last doing it, but it's been really exciting. And I've been, like I say, I love working with landowners anyway. And so just being able to go out and meet folks and see what they're their objectives are for their property and how they might get there, and give them some education literature that they can read. It's one step at a time, but like I say, it's been well received so far.
That's awesome. So do you have any upcoming events that local residents can participate in? You mentioned that you had some upcoming June and July, possibly. Do you have anything else going on?
Right now, the big thing we're focused on is this fire workshop and demonstration burning. That will probably be toward the end of July. We're still working with the agencies and, whatever permits we need to do and getting speakers lined up. That's probably the next big one. We'll probably do another tour in the fall, probably in South County, but we haven't firmed that up yet. We try to move our tours around in order to reach different groups, because if we have a, tour in Roseburg, somebody from Elkton or down in Tiller or Days Creek or something probably can't attend. So we're trying to move the tours around. We're actually working with Phoenix School on a project up on Big Oak Flats. I believe it's for next year, where they're going to collect some acorns. We're going to plant oaks, do some, remove some competing conifer trees up there on Big Oak Flats, maybe do some firework up there. I've volunteered folks for UOP members to go up and do some planting for a couple days. I've been working with the master gardeners. I say they're very interested in starting to grow out oaks, locally sourced oaks, that sort of thing. And I think there's some real possibilities there. And so that'll be a focus over the next, so many years. But that would be great if we could get a source of locally grown oak trees. So those are the things that we've got on tap right now. I'm sure there's others that I'm kind of drawing a blank on right now. But like I say, each one of them kind of takes off on its own. I know the FFA group up in Sutherland at Sutherland High School took on Ford's Pond. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but they grew out their own oaks from acorns and planted them and protected them and done the removing the invasive species out there on their trail. And they've done the whole ball of wax out there, and it's really impressive what they've done. And I know each class that comes up kind of carries that on. And so, if we could get people to adopt certain areas like the Knipe Ranch, which is a Douglas County park, those sorts of things, I think there'd be some opportunity there to do some more work. And then, like I say, just trying, the biggest thing we're trying to do now is get a really large funding grant that we would have to build the capacity to, do some of the controlled fire work, the invasive species work, that sort of thing, and help the landowners out, or get an equipment fire cooperative where we've got, funding and people and equipment and expertise to do more controlled burning, particularly on non-ag lands, that would help oaks. So those are all things on our list. The wheels grind slowly. You got to be patient when you're doing these things, but we're working through all those, all kind of together, all moving the same direction. So with any luck, we'll, continue to grow and continue to get the word out. So
that's awesome. If a college student or like high school student was really interested in learning about oaks and oak restoration, but they don't have property and, the opportunity to engage in activities like that, could they go to you to learn and be a part of projects you're working on?
And we put them in touch with, like the Forest Service and Phoenix School work that they're doing up at Oak Flats, or, maybe something, put them in touch with somebody out at Ford's Pond. We will probably have some projects that we will be promoting as well. So, yeah. And we have used college students. I had actually three graduate students from the University of Oregon helped us put the questionnaire together that we sent to all the landowners. They did it as a class project and did a really good job. I was really impressed with how well they did, and they spent time interviewing landowners to see what they wanted, and helped us do the statistical analysis. So there's things to do out there in the elk world. I know some of the other groups, you know, like Morgan, you know, would probably love to have an extra set of hands out there collecting seed, you know, of native plants, not necessarily oak acorns, but other native plants, and maybe even help growing them out. So I say there's opportunity out there. Some of it would have to be donated because we don't have a huge funding source, but hopefully in the future we will have that. I know the tribe, Calcrick tribe, at one point was interested in starting a native plant nursery for some of the tribal youth out there. I think we could, you know, do something with that. So I say, yes, I think there's opportunities for people that don't have property that just to get involved. I mean, some of the people with EOP don't have property, or they've just got a house in town, but that's not necessary to help out. So.
Awesome. So how would landowners or people that are interested go about getting in contact with you if they have questions or want to take a tour?
Well, you can look at the website, Umpqua Oaks Partnership, or they can give me a call. Most people know my name and my phone number, and I say I get calls 2, 3, 4 times a week. They can attend our Umpqua Oak Partnership monthly meeting if they like. It's some people like meetings, some people don't. They're kind of the nuts and bolts, you know, of discussions of strategic plans and grant applications and that sort of thing. But you know, or join one of the groups that promote that sort of thing, like Audubon or the Master Gardeners or whatever. So if they want to, I'm not that hard to find. So they can also send me an email. I don't know if you have the capacity to put an email address up there, but it's Steve Denn, StevedennN, small letters, all one word, at mydfn, so mydfn.net. And I can give you a phone number too if you'd like, but 541-671-1803.
Perfect.
And we can provide them with the same literature that we give landowner. I mean, whatever they want to do. If they do have property, I've gone out and, you know, toured property with landowners and kind of given them my opinion, brought them the literature and, you know, maybe some potential funding sources, or connect them with, you know, if they want to do fire, put them in touch with DFPA or state forestry, or, you know, just get them in contact with the right people. So, but yeah, they can start with me if they'd like.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing your contact information. I think that's the end of my questions. Do you have anything you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I think we covered everything pretty good. I'm sure after we hang up, I'll think of something I should have said, or I think you covered the whole gamut of oak in an hour there. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living Downstream.